Hey, and welcome to the Design Podcast. I'm your host, Ashton Snook, and we're on a mission to share the creator's voice. Before we get into today's episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave us a star rating. We'd appreciate it. So today's episode is going to be a great one. We're joined by Geetika Agrawal, a former creative director at RGA, an avid traveler who then turned tech founder and CEO of Varwa, Vacation with an Artist. Geetika, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Ashton. Super excited to be here today.
Awesome. And I'm so excited to have you on the show, particularly because we're going to dive into, you know, your life journey around creativity, but specifically as a technology founder in New York State and setting up Vacation with an Artist, or Varwa, which is going to be epic. So I'm really, really interested in getting into this one. But before we do, let's kind of take it back to grassroots. You know, I'm always interested, particularly when we have more designers, to figure out, you know, what ignited this passion to get into creativity and into the design fields. So let's start there. Can you tell us about your personal journey? We can go all the way back to being a kid, or you can jump into when you're at college. It's entirely up to you. But really, what inspired you to get into the creative fields initially? And then what's brought you up to this space where you've become a technology founder?
Yeah, absolutely. I think whenever I'm asked this question, I always keep going back to this moment in my childhood when I remember there used to be craft fairs in schools. And I was just always very excited about the craft fair. I loved making things, designing, putting up a show, and being in that environment where I'm talking to people and showing them what I made. But just the act of making and working on projects was always very exciting versus just memorizing things. So I think since I was a little kid, I think I was just drawn to creating things. And that kind of led me all the way to my college choices. Growing up in a country where most people go for the engineering or medicine or law route, I decided I wanted to become an architect. Which was a very unusual choice. But again, I just saw myself designing and creating things. I've always also been a dancer, and I loved that interaction with the audience, creating kind of an imaginary world for people through dance. And I think, yeah, that has been the common thread throughout my creativity, which is creating experiences for people, creating things for people, bringing my imagination to life, making uncommon connections in the world, and, you know, dreaming up of things. So that led me to architecture eventually, despite everyone's rolling eyes that you're going to have the poorest job ever. And somewhere there I saw that I was exposed to what technology could bring to creativity, and how it could be made more interactive using technology. So that led me to my industrial design program in Los Angeles, where I ended up collaborating with a lot of engineers and creating more smart environments, designed interactive games for Disney. And that very eventually cool. led me to the advertising world, and again in the digital world, but more for the internet. And I think the common theme in all of this was, again, just creating experiences. The medium has never mattered to me. Medium to me is just a tool. So it could have been architecture, which is building through, you know, stones and masonry, or if it's product design, it's just, you know, hardware, or in the internet, it's just the web. So for me, the tools have not mattered. It's really the end experience that I'm creating, the world I'm creating for people, and what people can do. So that has also eventually led me to create Varwa, Vacation with an Artist, which is, again, what using technology, what can we do? And in this case, it is using technology, we can now find artists around the world, connect with them, and be able to go study with them in person. So the experience is still in person, but we're using technology to do something that we couldn't do before. So that's kind of been my journey.
Very well said as well. What I love about that as well is I totally agree with this whole idea that Medium is almost redundant, right? As long as you're a designer or a creator, almost what you interact with, how you manifest those ideas is somewhat redundant. And it's an interesting debate. I see a lot of designers that have grown up in, I suppose, what my generation of designers have been so fixed into digital as the only medium for creating, that I don't think we had the exposure, right? And I think we were probably the first, kind of dating myself here, probably like the earlier version of like digital natives. I think we're kind of just on the cusp of that becoming a thing, right? And I think Gary Amit, who we had on the very first episode of this, being a bit older than me, right? I also studied architecture, became an industrial designer, has been this incredible influence over the last 20, 30 years through his studio. It's really interesting. I think he also saw this, right? And this ability for us to get too trapped into digital, and he teaches his own design team to think in different mediums and to work for the ideas. And what's really interesting is when we look at VAWA, there is something so powerful and emotive about connecting with your hands and building and making things that I think today we're probably at risk of, whilst technology being an amazing enabler, can be a risk of moving away from the craft and that connection. I think it's an incredibly exciting space to unpack, but I'm distracting us, right? I want to talk about less about my ideas and talk about.
You're bringing up something very important, and I won't take too long to say this, but the idea is whether it's physical or digital, whatever you want to create, I believe you need tools. As a craftsman, you have your set of tools, right, which are your hand tools. As modern day digital designers, our set of tools is our computer and like other software and things that we use. And it's just a matter of knowing our tools and what we can create with it. Tools is just technology.
True.
And then what we're creating in the end, whether it's through a physical tool or a digital tool, in the end, what we're creating is an experience or a product that someone, which is always a human, is using. And I think that kind of perspective really is helpful, because as we move forward in the world, the tools and technologies are just going to be changing, and we'll just need to keep learning new tools and having them in our arsenal to create different kind of experiences and products. So I find just this idea of being a designer and having your set of tools and understanding that as a very powerful idea.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, I think it would be really interesting for the audience, and specifically for me in a selfish way, I want to know what gave you the spark to branch out and build not just one company, but co-found others, but particularly with VAWA. You know, someone who has been very successful in the creative field and creator director at RGA, which is a phenomenally well-respected organization in our field. You know, the idea of VAWA, and I can hear it in your history and the journey you've been on, it feels like an obvious thing, but making that jump to start your own company and to leave a relatively prestigious job and to build something in the technology space in New York, which is arguably probably one of the world's most expensive cities, has risk. So what was it that gave you that confidence and inspiration to say, hey, I'm going to step out on my own. I'm going to go build VAWA, build my vision and bring it to life?
You know, it's an interesting. It's taking that leap sometimes can sound very glorified, but it is, you know, it's not easy for everyone, but I think as a designer, maybe for me, I'm just fueled by creating, by making things, by bringing my ideas to life. And I'm not fueled by necessarily a career or a title or, you know, money. Sure, all those things are important, but I think the real fuel for me is creating and making things. And of course, working in an agency was great. I mean, my 10 years at RGA were one of the best working years, and I worked with the most talented people and worked on the latest cutting edge things. And I kind of feel like for me, that was more like a school where I learned, you know, where I learned all these skills and learned how to do the greatest work and all those things. But there comes a point where, you know, you kind of limited, you can't just dream up ideas and create your own. And, you know, you're still kind of at the mercy of what your client wants. So I think it was just that itch that I had to scratch, that I've had this idea, it's a big idea, and I'm going to try and make it do it. In terms of, risk, I mean, usually if you boil it down, the risk boils down to two things. Am I going to have money to sustain myself during this time while I'm trying to make this risk? And two, what if it fails? I usually go by the worst. What is the worst that can happen? And really, I knew that if this doesn't work, it's okay. I can get another job. Finding a job is not going to be hard because I have good experience. I'm a designer. I can create things. So I think it was just confidence in my abilities that I'll just find another job. And the second was financial. So I decided to build this by leaving New York, because you're right, New York is very expensive. And if I needed to pay rent, it would be really hard. So I decided to actually, it just also coincidentally happened that I learned about a program called Remote Year, which would allow me to travel for 1 year to 12 countries. And I would spend a month in each country. And they would kind of take care of all the logistics of booking flights and accommodation. And not that I can't do that. I've traveled so much. That's the easiest part. But it was just, if I was going to take this year to build a business, it was kind of nice to have that been taken care of by someone else.
Yeah.
And the total cost for the year was way less than what I would spend living in New York. And so financially, it would just not be that expensive. And secondly, it was allowing me the very unique opportunity to build this specific business where each country that I was living in, I was using that 1 month to find the artists in those countries that you can't find online. Yeah. And so it was being on the ground and building it, and also just building the platform. So I think it was just that possibility that I kind of manifested and created and saw, oh, this is an opportunity. This is how I can build it. And that's how I de-risked that jump. But it took me a few years to make this happen.
Yeah. I bet. I think that was a very succinct way of capturing the biggest fears that we have. And I've worked, I've toyed with the idea of starting a couple of companies at the beginning of my career. And we, you know, kind of went about 6 months and a couple of different ventures and found, you know what, the risk is too high for me right now. I quite like having a steady income. I've supported a few startups over the years as a consultant as well. And I can see the risks that people take. So I always find it such a fascinating thing. But what's more interesting actually is that whole assessment of, I can go and probably have one of the most exciting years of my life, meeting all these great people, enabling that to help me build and find, you know, these very talented individuals, which, as you said before, you wouldn't be able to access online, and do it in a way that was actually more cost efficient than sitting in your apartment in NYC and building this thing. So I think that is in itself just a really inspiring place and an inspiring way to go about building a business.
Incredible. Yes, yes. And I do feel that there were a lot of advantages about that whole setup. Because one, when you're just traveling, you are less risk averse. You're just in a more exploratory mode. So also, you know, you're just more excited to take risk. You're more open-minded. So I think it creates that environment. So yes, I'm happy that it all worked out. Of course, it required, you know, a lot of tough things to maneuver and make it all possible, because I still needed a visa to live in the country. And so there were, you know, all those challenges that I had to overcome. But yeah, it was very exciting and probably the best way I could have built this.
Yeah. I'm slightly jealous of that. I think that's a really cool way to spend a year. So besides like this year of going out there and figuring out what it would be and finding these right people, there's obviously all these different challenges. You know, how do you physically build a technology company? How do you find funding? What were some of the challenges you found through that process in the early days as a founder?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge, to be honest, was just a lot of self-awareness. Building a business is very humbling, especially if you have been working with one of the best companies in the world with some of the most talented people. You think you can really build anything, and then you're kind of on your own, and suddenly you have this self-realization of what are truly your superpowers and what are truly your gaps and what you can do and what you need people for. And so that was, I think, the first kind of a shock to really realize what can I do myself. The second was, I think, getting out of your own head, which is, I'm a designer, I'm a product designer. So of course, I had an approach to just build like a designer. But now I was not just building a product, I was building a business, which is different. And kind of going, kind of always being aware to step into that mode, in the business mode, was hard. It was not natural. It's not something I had learned. It was very different. A lot of decisions I was making were very much driven by the product, not by what's going to make a successful business. And so I would say that was the hardest challenge until date is the hardest challenge. It's gotten a lot better because now I have a much wider perspective of what truly makes a product successful. Because you can build a great product, but then people still need to learn about it. People still need to, more people need to be able to use it, the pricing, the, there's just so many other aspects that go into making something that a lot of people will use. So I think that's also been the most exciting part of this journey, is learning all those new skills and getting all that wider perspective. But obviously, like anything, when you're learning something, when there's growth, it is challenging and hard. And lastly, I would say also the network. Again, you know, as a designer, you know, maybe, or working in a design creative world, your network is limited. And suddenly your network changes when you're in the business world. It takes a while to build that network, which I think is very, very important whenever you're starting out something on your own, because a lot of things just get done if you know the right people.
Yeah, as well said. I think what's really interesting there is, as a designer, I spent the last few years really thinking about this, whilst not going, you know, taking that step to go and build my own thing, but working inside of technology companies, building these sort of into these very early stage markets with consumer IoT solutions, is that there's a lot of risk with it. And actually, I came to that sort of understanding as a designer, no matter how good of a job you do on the UI and the journeys and the hardware, if ultimately the whole thing doesn't knit together in a way that makes commercial sense, the business is never going to be able to succeed. I worked for a company called Hive a few years ago, and I started to understand this, that design could only go so far without the business backing it. As you say, how do we position it? How do we price it? What are the logistics behind all these things? And it's a really challenging thing to try and learn. It's a very challenging thing to teach your design team as well. And I've got to that point where, for me, it's about trying to unpack that. And I can imagine the challenge as a creator when you're trying to build your own thing and you're very passionate about the vision. How do I, self-moderating yourself, I imagine, to say, okay, if I do X, it might be the best thing ever for the end user, but can I sustain that financially? I think that's a really interesting challenge to look into.
Yeah, and yes, absolutely. And also knowing as a designer, like when to stop, right? Because we may be designing that perfect product, which absolutely we should. And I think as a creative, I will always fight for the better product, because in the end, if the product is not great, no business can make it great. So at the core, the product has to be great without a doubt. People have to find value in it without a doubt. That is the core. But I think sometimes if you kind of go too deep in there without solving some of the other problems, it can overwhelm you as an entrepreneur, because you have so much to do in such a short time. And so that's where the prioritization comes, is this really important right now? Is this really going to make that difference in moving this forward? And I think asking that question again and again, it's just like a muscle you have to develop as a designer, because of course we will want to do it. It will hurt. It will pain you. Oh, this thing is not looking right. But it's, again, zooming back out and saying, but is it really going to matter at this moment? And so fine-tuning that decision-making, fine-tuning what really matters, prioritization, I think that's really the key skills of a really successful entrepreneur, I feel.
And I totally agree. And I think what's really interesting for all of our listeners is, I think that advice is so applicable for designers today, particularly product designers, where there is clearly a sense of being very ethical, very moral about the quality of the work, which is an amazing passion for us to have. But as you can say, it can also become an obsession with the detail. And this is where I think we start to see conflicts with traditional quote unquote business folks who understand that there's a financial impact and there's a risk if something doesn't get to market within a certain timeframe. And I think, not in a probably less risky state, but for all designers, it's that sense of, I need to self-moderate. How far is far enough in order for this to be a useful or successful item, and not dip into that obsession, which is almost a creative's curse of being overly passionate sometimes.
Yes, absolutely. And it keeps coming down to simplicity. Simplifying the essential, finding the essential. I think that's just a life practice in general, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree.
It's getting to the root of it and getting to the simplest truth is really in the end the true magic sauce.
And very well said as well, the simplest truth. That's a quote right there. It's a really good one. I love that a lot. So the company's obviously grown, over the last couple of years. You've picked up a bunch of awards. I think you've been Airbnb in some categories, if I'm not mistaken, as well, which is very successful. Congrats.
Yes, we won the Webby for Best in Travel. And so, we beat pretty much all the big travel companies in that category, which was a huge success and a huge encouragement for us.
Anyway, I derailed it. The question I was going to ask was, obviously, because you've done these amazing things. You've got a network of these great creators. You're building up the business. How has the company changed over time? Because I think one of the most challenging things I've heard from speaking with other founders is the sense of how quickly do I grow? Who do I bring in? And how does that impact the culture and the vision of the company? So I wondered if you could maybe talk us through your experience with Varwa and how you've been managing that growth.
Yes. I would say we started off as a very small team, and we're still a very small team. So from that perspective, we haven't changed much. during the pandemic, we kind of did a mini pivot. We start our core business is in-person apprenticeships. So you can find artists from around the world and you can book a 4 to 7 day apprenticeship with the artist. So you can fly to that country, work in their studio. But during the pandemic, when people stopped traveling, we kind of launched the online product. So now you could sit at home and learn with the same artist. You could kind of travel to other countries through through your computer, which we are doing right now also. And I think that really gave a new perspective to the business, because it was initially very hard because we're all about creating in-person experiences. And now we were forced to create online experiences. So it was initially, there was internally a lot of resistance. But what we realized is it actually helped us reach a much wider audience. And it allowed us to let basically give a taste of the experience to more people while they sit at home. And I think just going through that experience made us provide internally in a different perspective on how to grow the business, and also kind of get out of our own way of growth. And so now coming out of the pandemic, of course, you know, people are traveling again. And so it's very exciting, but we still have the online product. So culturally, I would just say we're becoming more mature about making more sound business decisions, getting better at prioritization, getting better at focus. Because I remember in the earlier first year, second year, we were just trying just so many things. I think we were doing too much. And now we have really scaled down a lot of initiatives. We're really focused on this question: is this going to move the needle forward? And having those one or two North Star questions has helped the team internally a lot. I think it's also less overwhelming when you're not working on 20 different things and trying to just, you know, shoot in the dark. So I would say that's the biggest cultural shift. We've always been remote. So not big change there. But we've definitely improved our processes. So we're documenting more, for example, internally. So there's less confusion. I think we're learning how to do things, and like we've just learned how to do things better in a more organized way. I would say that's the biggest change that has happened.
Nicely said. And in terms of the remote first approach, this is something that I've tapped into when I've come across like Sketch. They've always been a remote first organization, right? And we are, as a society, particularly in Britain, at an intersect where there seems to be a resistance to the idea of being at least remote forward. Not even remote first all the time, but the idea that everyone can be enabled and it has the accessibility to contribute into the company. It's a debate that keeps rolling on. What do you think makes remote working successful for VAWA? How do you make sure the team is integrated as a team?
Oh, Ashton, I'm still figuring out the answer for that.
Fair enough.
What I'd say is, for us, remote started more as just a convenient thing, because I built this business on the road for 12 months. Yeah. I was building it just with my laptop and co-working spaces in all these countries. So location was never kind of part of the DNA of how the company was built in the first place, right? And so it kind of naturally made sense that we could just work from a computer. We don't have any physical inventory. We don't need to have an office necessarily. That said, I think what we did is we still think that working together as a team does make a difference. So before the pandemic, for a year and a half, we actually were together and we were working from traveling and working together from different countries.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's unique.
I know. So we were working from Mexico for, 6 months. We were working from LA for 4 months, or like different parts. So we were still together, but now we could still be in other parts of the world. That lasted for a while, but then, in the end, all this moving does get to you and it is tiring. I know everyone is talking about nomads and that's the future of work. It's going to get tiring after a while. Just on our bodies. And at least that's what I've experienced and a lot of my other friends who've been nomads for a while. So I think at some point we'll all want to, ground ourselves in one place. But then this topic of remote work is still challenging. So what we're doing now is we're finding that when you bring on new team members, it's really hard to onboard them remote. Because they're sitting in another place in their home by themselves, trying to figure this out by themselves. There's no way for them to understand the culture or way of doing things. So it becomes quite hard for them to be successful and for the company to really train them, and get on the same page. So we're trying to do more in-person onboarding so we kind of get to know each other. And then I think we can do remote more easily because now we kind of know each other. There's a chemistry there already, which makes it a lot easier. So I think it's a combination of that really real understanding. What are the moments in a team member's journey where in person is really important and actually makes things better? And what are the moments where it doesn't matter if they're in front of you. In fact, it's better that they do whatever, whenever they can. So I don't know when we get really big, how we're going to make that possible, but at this time, that's what's working for us.
Thank you for sharing that. I think this for me is a passion of figuring out what the future, if there's such a thing, the future of work. It's like, how do we build into this? And for me, it's this balance of how do we optimize for doing the work, and more importantly, or equally as important, I should say, is this sense of the work being not just delivery of tasks, but building something together.
Exactly. And
it's as much of a spiritual journey as it is a functional to create a product or to receive a paycheck.
Oh my God, I'm so glad you said it that way. It is a spiritual journey to create something. It's not just a task. Right now, I think a lot of the remote work is looked at with the lens of, I can just finish this task and I don't need to be part of this. And I think that's where the flaws are of the remote working. But yeah, if you can find ways where you can create that kind of a culture where it balances the purpose with the productivity or shared purpose with productivity, then yeah, it can work, and it will vary for each team, for each company, for what they're building. It can't be one solution fits all.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Now we are short on time for the show, and I really want to get a sense of where do you see Varwa going next? Now you've mentioned you've pivoted through the pandemic, done some virtual work. You're still getting people back to these great apprenticeships in person. What can you tell us about what the future looks like, or at least in the short term for Varwa?
Yeah, well, we are on this mission to provide a platform to all these master artists around the world who are wanting to teach and who are wanting to connect with people from around the world. And there are thousands of these master artists worldwide. And so we are just focused on adding more, finding more artists, discovering them, and giving them this platform to teach. And in return, of course, for people to be able to find them and learn from them. So right now, our single focus is to kind of add more artists and more destinations, more art forms that people may not know about, just create more opportunities for people to go on Avawa, because we are seeing that coming out of the pandemic, people are looking for these kind of transformational experiences where it's a combination of learning new skills, having time to reflect and kind of slow down, but also something fun. And so because Avawa is a combination of that, like, people are looking for that. And so we just want to focus right now on creating more options and opportunities for people. So we've been adding new artists every week. We have a new artist we're going to be launching next week. He's from Mexico. Very exciting artist. It's a great place to go. Culturally rich. You get to stay with the artist for, 7 days by a lake. So it's great view, great setting. And you make art. We're just adding more artists right now and creating just more awareness for Avawa, because not many people know about it yet.
It's a hidden gem, and I think what's really interesting is it completely flips the script on people's presumption of travel today, right? And what's really interesting is it's about craft, it's about exploration, it's about education. But what's really interesting is it sounds and feels really immersive as an experience, because it's not just about getting from A to B and staying in a hotel and sitting on the beach. It's about something that it's like soul food, right? Like, the whole thing is like bringing you into something that's, really inspiring, and you get to live there with the artist. And I find that a really fascinating proposition.
Yeah, it's as immersive as it gets.
Yeah. Cool. So I've got a couple of questions that I always love to kind of wrap up the show with, which sometimes can be challenging, but I always think they're quite fun to ask our guests. So the first one I always love to ask is, what does great design look like for you?
Great design to me has three components, I think. It is useful. So it's actually solving a problem for someone. It is truthful, which means it's not just made up because, someone's fancy. Like, it's truthful. And I think we all know it at the heart, right? Like, when something is truthful, it says that through what it is. And the third is, it has to be interesting. It can't just be functional. It just can't be useful. It has to be interesting and fun, because, who doesn't love fun? So I think, good design to me is people used to say form follows function, right? So form and function. So yes, those are there. And then it's just like, how does it elevate our imagination and speak to the larger truth that we are all seeking as humans.
Very well said. And I'm really glad that you added that particular third point in there about it being interesting and engaging, because that's often overlooked, I think, with commercial products. I mean, strangely, I'm in a process of moving house, and I've got, like I say, a young daughter now. And so I've been writing my will just as a, hopefully backup, right?
Smart.
It's a serious topic, and it's smart, but to do, I'd be a responsible dad, right? But what was really interesting is that the process of it is relatively archaic. But this week I found a provider that somehow, not only through their branded and their user experience, but the overall holistic product, took something that was quite daunting and strangely flipped on its head and made it fun. And that's a really weird thing to kind of resonate with. But I think it articulates those three points that you describe. And I think if we can encourage more folks in our industry to think like that, not just about the function and about it driving conversion, but how it's actually making people feel, we create these products that actually add real value to the economy and to humanity itself. So that's very exciting stuff.
Yes, totally.
It's a challenge, right? But I think with people like you being a spokesperson for it, we will start to see a better world of products that have real meaning, which is
yeah, exactly. I think it's always finding that right balance, because sometimes it can be too fun where it's frivolous, and sometimes it can be too functional and boring, and sometimes it's just like just made up and it's really not solving. It doesn't have that soul or the truth. It's always finding that balance.
Yeah, totally agree. The sort of final question I always love to ask is, if you could go back in time, right, in your time machine to your 18-year-old self, what life wisdom would you impart?
Oh my God. I'd say learning how to work with people in a team. And I feel like in the end, good work happens because of people. Mm. And you cannot make great work just on your own. You need people to make great work happen. And as humans, because we're all flawed, it is the most important skill to really understand how we as humans can work together and then create great work. So I think a lot of that is not taught in school. We do have group projects and things like that, but it's really not emphasized. And I think, just to be able to build a team and work together and really tap into each other's strengths, I think that goes larger than even creating a business, because in the end, we also function as this community, as a society. So I would just say, yeah, just paying more attention to that as an 18-year-old. It's something I would have told myself.
It's very, very good life advice, and I think very relevant for a lot of the conversations where I'm seeing in the media now around society, particularly youth society. So well said. Great way to wrap up. Gitoge, it's been amazing having you on the show. Really appreciate you taking the time. Where can we send listeners to learn more about yourself and Vawa?
Yeah, thank you for having me on the show. People can go to our website, which is vawaa.com. It's a weird acronym for vacation with an artist. So to make it easier, you can also just go to Google and type in vacation with an artist. We're hopefully still ranking number one for that. We are also on Instagram, VAWAA, the usual channels, Twitter and Facebook. And you can also email us anytime at hello@vawaa.com. So always open to receiving emails and from all around the world. We're a global community. So we like our friends all around the world.
Awesome. Thanks so much. It's been epic.
Thank you. Thank you, Ashton.
Thanks for joining us today on the Design Podcast. The show is produced by the Snook Brothers, hosted by Ashton Snook, and edited by Eric Snook. If you enjoyed the episode, we'd appreciate you leaving a star rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Stay connected with us on Instagram or LinkedIn. Our handle is design_podcast. Or check out the website designpodcast.co. Thanks again, and take care, folks.